Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're beginning the show today by talking with you about medical imaging. Come a long way since, when was it, X-rays were first developed, I think back in 1895. And we're going to update you on that a bit right now with our guest, Kevin Ellisary. Kevin's a professor of medical physics and biomedical engineering at UW-Madison. He's working on using light to detect cancer and other diseases. Pretty cool. We'll talk about that, of course, and also talk about some other advances that are coming your way. And we'd like to hear what you know about or what you would like to know about medical imaging. Any questions about how the techniques work? Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Kevin Ellisary, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Oh, thank you so much, Larry, and thanks everybody for listening.
So when we refer to imaging these days, what technologies are healthcare providers using most often?
Yeah, so when you think about, when you go to a clinic, by far the most common modalities are probably terms you either heard of or have had loved ones have, things like ultrasound and CT and PET. These have become, the standards of care. And what's really changed over the last 20 years is our ability for these methods to work more effectively, work cheaper, and also work hand in hand with software and computation. With the revolution of computing has affected us all in our personal lives. It's also had tremendous impact in the medical imaging world. So when we talk about imaging, computers are really a huge part of it.
What do these technologies allow them to do for patients?
So when you think about your body, we've had this great revolution that we really understand better what all the genes are. We know the parts list to your body, but we don't know how your body works. It's like knowing all the parts list to your car, but you don't really know how it all works till you drive the car. And what imaging allows us to do is see the phenotype, see what your body reacts to. So in normal development, imaging is huge to understand normal function. But in disease, any kind of disease, whether it's diabetes, cancer, Alzheimer's, all these diseases, the ability for early detection is huge. So one big thing imaging allows us to do is see the problem as early as we can. And the earlier we catch diseases, the higher chance we have for improved therapeutics. But we also can use imaging to diagnose how effective a therapeutic is. So imaging can be very useful to see how you're doing in treatment. And so imaging can play multiple roles during the course of your health. One of the most common uses is early diagnostics, but it can also be good for gauging the progression of a disease as well.
Yeah. When you think about it, what the diseases that have been impacted, it sounds like a lot of them, probably which ones have been most impacted?
Well, as someone who's a new dad, I think one of the things that I most appreciate is what it's done for medical imaging for babies. We have much better rate of pregnancies thanks to ultrasound. So that can be for normal development. So certainly we have healthier children due to imaging. We certainly have way better rates in cancer treatment due to advanced imaging. The ability, for example, you look at the great impact that's been made in breast cancer treatment has been due to imaging. And there's great promise for other diseases. I think in the eye, it's been very exciting. Today we have a speaker from the National Eye Institute, the head of the Eye Institute here on campus, actually. And so I've been thinking a lot about the eye today, something else I work on. And tremendous work in diabetes of the eye has been pushed forward by advanced imaging. So imaging has really impacted every part of your body. And the parts that we can't see in your body yet, we're trying to work to see it. So the dream is to see every part, every nook and cranny of your body with imaging.
Well, so what's the research going on at UW-Madison then in this area?
Yeah, so I'm representing today. It's kind of a daunting task, but I'm someone who's been on campus a long time, about 20 years now in research. It's a huge field. So our imaging work is way larger than just one department, but prominent departments is the area of medical physics and radiology and the Cancer Institute, mortgage, biomedical engineering, all places I'm happy to be part of it. And I think what we realize is that you're talking about hundreds of investigators. And really, the research falls into different camps depending on how you look at it. You could group it by disease. And certainly, there is a lot of great work trying to be done to develop better drugs for cancer using imaging, early detection, better ways to do radiotherapy guided by imaging, so being able to radiate or do chemotherapy based on specific imaging patterns, and of course many other diseases, as I mentioned. Or you could group it by imaging modality, like all the groups that do ultrasound, all the groups that do optics. But the impact is across the board, and everybody is working together. I think one of the neat, unique things Wisconsin does is it's incredibly collaborative. There's something in the water, Larry, I think, on this campus that people just want to help each other. So irregardless of what they work on, whether it's cancer or diabetes or Parkinson's or which modality they use, the uniting theme is collaboration. And so none of this work in imaging is done by one person. It's always groups of people.
Jack in Mequon has a question, I believe. Let's go there. Jack, hi. Thanks for calling.
Well, good morning, Larry and guests. My question is on imaging. With anyone that has had a mesh put in for hernia repair and say years later there's some discomfort, can that a 7-8-year-old mesh be imaged in the injury site of the hernia?
So I'm very careful here as an academic to not pretend I'm a doctor. So I would definitely recommend there are experts in the area that can tell you the details. But I do know that, yes, there hasn't worked on an imaging mesh repair, particularly of the pelvis. And there are people at UW, I think particularly with CT imaging, has this been done. And so there are articles online about it, but also there's experts on campus that could advise you. But certainly one very important area of imaging is to evaluate surgeries. I've been involved in studies where the surgery was, you know, being used to correct some malignancy, and then you use the imaging to see how well did that surgical correction go, and whether that's, you know, guiding a catheter or looking at a mesh. But certainly mesh repair is something that CT imaging has been used for.
All right. There you go, Jack. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. So the collaboration, I want to get back to that for a minute because that's such a cool thing, but someone wonders, is there a chance for some sort of conflict of interest going on relating to this collaboration that might have, and the research dollars and so forth?
Well, I think we're very careful at UW that conflict of interest is something that is very carefully managed. We always want to be careful. Collaborations can happen on so many scales, collaborations with companies, collaborations with researchers, collaborations with fellow clinicians. At the end of the day, the primary motivation is the patient's health. So nothing would ever happen on this campus to jeopardize that, and we would never let any collaboration, including with a company, allow that to happen. So there's a very carefully managed conflict of interest. Anything you do with companies is carefully regulated, and we're very careful about disclosing those interests. So all these collaborations are only positive. There's really the patient's health drives everything. What's unique about Wisconsin is that, you know, the teams are really set up across departments, right, work well together. And also there's great advantage of having commercial, collaborations. You may think, of course, you think about a company, you think, of course, they have financial motivations, but the advantage of a company is they can bring things to market quicker, and they can also allow us to evaluate new technology. So one of the great industrial collaborations we've had with UW has been the relationship with General Electric. GE has had this amazing relationship where, you know, some of the best equipment is located here at Wisconsin. And that benefits the patient directly because they get to be involved in the latest and greatest equipment, but it also means UW researchers and clinicians can vet this equipment and then give feedback back to GE to improve that equipment for the next phase. So yes, we're very careful to manage these collaborations. I make sure there's no conflicts of interest. We have really tremendous groups at UW that help with that effort and are part of the team, these regulatory folks. And we're also very careful to be conscious of the fact that all of you fund our work. So we're very in debt to taxpayers. So we're very careful that taxpayer research is done appropriately, but also reported correctly. So I'm a big fan of making sure that everything we do, we report back to the community so people can learn from what we do and you can maximize that taxpayer investment.
Well, let's talk about some of the work you do. To tell us more about the research that's going on in your lab.
Yeah, I've been fascinated since I first started school. So I'm a UW product. I did all my training here. I originated from St. Louis in 92 and never left. And both when I was a student and now as faculty, I'm fascinated by the cell. The cell is behind everything good or bad that ever happened in your life, you know, from birth to learning to reproduction to aging and disease and death. These are all cell-based phenomena. So one of the things that my colleagues and I are trying to bring to the table is increased recognition of cells and what they do. So when you think about cancer, if your tumor remains a nice focal point that you can go in and operate, your chances of survival and long-term health are very, very good. But if that cancer spreads in a process called metastasis, where it spreads in your body, that is where bad things happen, including death. And that's all a cell-based event. And so I'm fascinated by what makes cells tick in your body, both normally and abnormally. And we're really trying to bring cell imaging to the equation. The dream is that could we image metastatic events in your body? Could we watch cells happen in your body? And there's some real challenges to see things that tiny. We're talking about submicron. We're talking about super, super tiny events that are beyond the resolution of CT and ultrasound and MR. So we're trying to bring a new kind of mammification, if you will, a new kind of viewpoints. And this is a big theme of our field, trying to bring in the idea of multi-scale imaging, where we want to, it's kind of Google Maps your body. We want to see the whole body. We want to see the tumor, but then we want to see the subcells that make up the tumor. How does a tumor decide to spread, and what makes, you know, a cancer cell, you know, begin and become malignant? And we're very interested in what optical imaging. So using this class of imaging that can do cell resolution, which is called optical imaging, using novel wavelengths of light.
So light, it's not a light. Flashlight though.
Well, it's interesting. So back this year, if people are interested in the call, this year, a partnership with Wharf and the Mortgage Institute and the Discovery Institute is Year of the Glass across the world. And there's going to be a big event with the Science Festival all about this. So any of you on the call are interested in learning more about light and what it can do for human health and the human body and also human experience overall, this is the Year of the Glass. You can hear all about it because glass has made optics recently happen. So you're right. The origins of what we're talking about are going all the way back from trying to start a fire with a piece of glass to a magnifying glass and then a flashlight. We're just bringing it to the next level where we're using wavelengths of light that are beyond that flashlight. We're using wavelengths that are so far in the red and are so long a wavelength that you can't see with the naked eye, and yet they can penetrate your tissue very well. So we're using the ability of light to penetrate tissue and get diagnostic information. And there's tremendous information that can be gotten from the body using these novel light wavelengths. And so it's your flashlight, but it's a new kind of flashlight.
Hmm. If you can't see it, how'd you come up with it? Someone might ask this, you know, how'd you?
Yeah, absolutely. It is a neat thing about our field is that the collaborations go beyond disciplines. So as other fields, including NASA and space science and electrical engineering, started developing lasers that are capable of exciting these wavelengths, people started looking at tissues, and there were detectors, computer detectors, that can see things your eye can't see. And they started seeing novel signatures. And what's really, really exciting is that in your body, there are things that glow naturally, intrinsically. So you don't need any special drugs, any special things added to you. Your tissue naturally glows, and people have been able to discover this natural glowing and harness it. And so it really is the convergence of computers and novel electronics that allow you to see what your eye can't see. So you can think of it as augmenting your vision to see colors you couldn't see without it.
Really cool. Kevin Ellisiri, our guest today, professor of medical physics and biomedical engineering at UW-Madison, talking with him about developments in imaging and how it affects your health and mine. And I hope you'll join in with your questions. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. www.clarasmith.org. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Clara Neipert, our on-air producer, and Trina LaSousa, just back from France, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at developments in imaging today on the show as it relates to your health with our guest, Kevin Alisseri. Kevin, a professor of medical physics and biomedical engineering at UW-Madison. Questions or comments for him about imaging, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org. Kevin, are you working with local companies to use this technique?
Yes, I think one of the neat things that UW does that doesn't always get reported about is that not only do we work with local companies, but sometimes we create them. And so it usually gets created not just by the professors, but by really smart, motivated people in the lab. So we're very fortunate in our program to encourage grad students to form companies based on work they did. So one of my postdocs and one of our grad students, along with several other folks, came up in our lab with this idea of, could we try to make a difference using light in surgery? So if you go into a surgical operation and the doctor is cutting out the tumor, you really want them to cut as much of the tumor as they can with their knife, with leaving as much healthy tissue as they can behind. In the past, the sometimes surgery could result in getting a lot more tumor out, but it could remove healthy tissue, and that could result in some health issues. So we really want to get all the tumor we can, but leave as much healthy tissue as you can. So they call this idea of tumor margins, getting the right margins. Mm-hmm. And so this is called fluorescence guided surgery, where you can actually have the tumor light up a color and the surgeon can cut just that color. Let's say it's green. But the problem with fluorescence guided surgery, it uses a type of imaging called fluorescence imaging, which looks for things that glow through dyes that you inject. And it requires oftentimes for the room lights to be off the surgical suite. And I think all of us, including me, you know, get worried when they hear about the idea that perhaps their lights are going off during a surgery. Right? So our students came up with the idea of having the room lights blink, and they're blinking so quickly that we call it a transient period. It's 300 hertz, so it's fast enough that your eye can't see it. You think the lights are always on, this blinking, but our detectors can. And this allows us to collect during these transient periods where the lights are off to get the best image we can. This resulted in a company called Onlum, that is O-N-L-U-M-E, that now is a local company that is doing tremendous things in the local area and is now done its first patient. And so that's a great example of active work on surgery. And then another company has been Eliphas, that was funded by Manish Ora, who is known for his work in exact sciences here in town. He formed a company called Eliphas using UWIP, including from my lab, where they're screening patient tumors. They're growing up your own biopsies. And instead of the biopsy being pitched out of surgery, they're actually taking that discarded tumor tissue. They're growing it up as viable tumors and then testing drugs on them. So rather than drugs being tested in animals, this is testing drugs on real patient tissue. This company called Eliphas, named after elephants because they don't get cancer. Eliphas eats elephants. This is a really successful company that has well over 70 employees and now is getting ready to do drug trials. So those are just two examples of companies doing great things in the imaging space and strong ties to UW. So.
That's really cool. Well, we've got a number of people want to talk to you. So let's go to the phones here. Mary in Madison first. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I've never heard of anything except transplants for diabetes, and we've had it in our family, sadly. And I believe I heard that this is might have something to help diabetes. Is that true? And it's fascinating, the whole thing. Thank you.
All right. Imaging relating to diabetes. And Mary, thanks again.
Yeah. So for many, many years, there's been outstanding work done in the islet cell world, looking at islet cells and transplant helping for diabetes. And they've used all sorts of novel imaging, including a method called flow cytometry, where you can screen cells for certain attributes that are the best viable and then put them into a tube for transplant. So basically assuring that the quality of bulk cells or transplant is the best quality possible. And that's the role that light can play In that case, you could think of it as high throughput light. So being able to sort cells and have essentially two buckets, the best bucket for transplant and the ones you don't want to use. And that's been a huge difference in diabetes. The other area of diabetes, of course, is for wound therapy, right? There's been one of the sad things about diabetes is the wounds it creates and trying to do better wound management and being able to detect drugs and what are called matrices, basically band-aids that you could put on the diabetic wound to help treat it and using imaging to evaluate that. So imaging has several roles across the board for looking at diabetes. One, maybe last thing that's really quite exciting that maybe is a general theme of my research and many others has been looking at metabolism. So metabolism is a functional, is a huge part of who you are and how we all are. We all have known metabolic patterns. And without metabolic energy, we wouldn't be who we are. But metabolism can be hijacked in many diseases, including diabetes and cancer. And imaging, you often think, is a pretty picture, but it's increasingly becoming a meter, a functional meter that can measure things in your body. And it's really exciting that imaging can measure metabolism. And there are many, many researchers across this university that are using it to measure metabolism and cancer and other diseases. And diabetes is a prominent one for that.
Really fascinating. Mary, thank you again. Let's go to Catherine in Milwaukee. Hi, Catherine. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm excited to talk to you. My son Isaiah is a mechanical engineering student, junior year at Madison. But my question is related to me. I have polyps, and they did an ultrasound of the uterus and on the outside and vaginal, but they could not see the ovaries. I had MASH placed in me. I had a C-section at the age of 43 and almost bled to death. And so I have MASH in me, and then on my left side, I have like this big swollen pocket, and no one knows why. Any suggestions regarding imagery that I should have or that I should ask for?
So what kind of imaging might be used in this situation for Catherine?
Yeah, so when it comes to that specific, a malignancy, I want to be very careful and defer to doctors because remember, you're talking to engineer, right? So I have no business diagnosing anybody, and I wouldn't do that. But I would say encourage you to talk to your doctors. There are tremendous doctors available. You can get referrals. I would talk to, always get a second opinion. Both my mom and my aunt went through some similar issues, and getting second opinions was very helpful. I can just speak in general terms that remember that imaging is one tool in the arsenal. There might be other things that are also very helpful. Imaging is never used alone. We always use imaging in conjunction with the entire picture. Imaging is incredibly useful, but it can be very, very good to be used with blood tests and other kinds of diagnosis. And there's been a lot of work to understand polyps. One of the issues I have in the area is that often a fibrosis plays a big part of that. So you get a growth that is related to a lot of buildup in a fibrotic tissue. But the specifics of which technique and who to go to would be something I would get in a referral. But there are tremendous people at Medical College of Wisconsin, UW-Madison. So you should have a good help, and I would encourage you to seek it out.
Yeah, and Catherine's in Milwaukee. I imagine at Milwaukee, there she's going to find some the appropriate
absolutely.
People.
Absolutely right. But yeah, definitely ask questions. Ask the way you asked me, and say you just want to understand what's going on, and ask, you know, are there imaging approaches or blood tests? Are there things that they can run to try to get to the bottom of what's going on?
Yeah. Good luck, Catherine. Thank you for calling. Anne in Madison, we'll turn to you. Hi, Anne.
Hi. I have a question about imaging of the lower back. When I ask people if they have their lower back pain checked out, oh, yeah, you know, they always do an MRI. I don't think I could do an MRI. I'm claustrophobic. So what would be the best imaging for the lower back that would be diagnostic and not involved in MRI?
So again, I'm just going to ask this in general terms without knowing your specific condition. I would defer to your doctor as being the expert, but a couple things I think are quite exciting. You're not alone in the MRT being claustrophobic. My mother had to take a lot of MRI scanning, and those tubes are small and they're scary. And so there's been a lot of places, including here in Madison at Turtle Bay, many places where they have open scanners. So there's been a lot of work done in trying to create scanners that are open instead of a tube that you can actually scan someone who does not want to be scanned in a closed tube. So those do exist. You can search on the web for open, I think it's called open MR scanners. Rock Mackey, who's a very famous medical physicist and imaging developer, is just moving that one step further. He's actually had a spinoff company that was actually first trying to scan horses for injury to be upright. Because as you may know, for a horse, it's a injury can often be a death sentence, can be really traumatic because the horses can get hurt if they're on the floor. And so he developed a system for standing up MR. And now he's got a company to do upright scanning of upright humans. So there's a lot of technology out there that's coming down the pipeline. But right now you can certainly get an open, this exists at several places, including Madison, where you can just tell your clinician, it's covered by insurance typically, that you are don't want to get MR scanned in a closed tube and ask if there's open MR systems. Also, you could ask about CT scanning, as I mentioned earlier, for another caller. That has also been used for looking at herniated discs and other kinds of lesions. So a qualified clinician could let you know if a CT scan is appropriate.
Yeah, there you go. And thank you so much for calling. And you can join in too. The number to call, 800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. Stephen Waterloo called, but couldn't stay with us. But he's wondering what's the difference between a PET scan and a bone scan?
Well, the difference is what he means by bone scan. But typically what a PET scan is stands for positron emission tomography. It is looking at biochemical and metabolic function, and it uses some sort of radioactive drug to show what's happening, typically metabolism. While a bone scan could mean a couple of different things, but that's actually looking for density changes. And typically a bone scan would be looking at bone conditions such as inflammation and fractures. And probably in the context he's talking about, it's doing nuclear imaging. So again, using some sort of tracer or reactive drug to look at the density or the bone condition. And so the difference is that one case you're looking at more metabolism, and the other case you're looking more at bone structure or bone inflammation. Both are very useful and both have value. It really depends on the kind of disease and what kind of thing you're looking at. Mm-hmm. And obviously there are a lot of bone diseases where a bone scan is very useful, and PET can be useful for a number of things, including cancer.
Gene emailed us and wonders, can this new imaging be used with people with pacemakers?
So the imaging I'm talking about is currently done mostly on biopsy. So absolutely. Most of the technology out there, people are trying to make adaptable with pacemakers. But of course, there are limitations depending on the kind of pacemaker and what kind of imaging you're doing. But certainly the imaging developers are keeping that in mind to make sure they would never do anything that would interfere with the pacemaker.
Yeah, it sounds to me, well, I wouldn't know why it wouldn't work. But Tierney in Madison, we'll go to you. Hi, Tierney.
Thank you. I have a question that concerns a recommendation by a neurologist to do a brain MRI on my husband. The people in imaging say they cannot do it because his battery in his
pacemaker
has about 2 years to go, and the concern is that these two MRIs might drain his battery. So what
I would refer to, them that's outside my area, but certainly by medical imaging. And if they are concerned, I would definitely listen to that advice. So I would defer to them, but certainly pacemakers can be affected by the dose of things, including x-rays. So if they're concerned, I would be concerned as well.
Yeah. Is this something that you're working on with the light research that you're doing?
No, it's a totally different area that the, so imaging is such a huge area. That's why I want to be very careful with your callers that, there's a lot of the questions are more about clinical treatment. I'm more of an engineer who's developing new kinds of modalities. My modality is really about trying to understand what cells do with light. The light is very benign to what's implanted to your body, but in part because there are advances in medical imaging that is using doses of radiation that can get much deeper and more effective than light can, right? So there's trade-offs, right? But we're really more on the light scale which is actually dealing more with, at the moment, with surface tumors or biopsies. The medical imaging world can do tremendous things with imaging tumors deep in your body. But of course, one has to always take into account with any kind of imaging, what are the effects on normal tissue and what are the effects on pacemakers? And your clinician treating you would be the best person to answer that trade-off.
Thanks again, Tierney. Connie in Portage, we'll go to you. Hi, Connie.
Hi, good morning, Larry. Listen, I feel sorry for that lady that called in that's claustrophobic. I am too. But I had to have an MRI, and I think it was Turbo Bay. But anyway, tell her I tolerated it just fine. They were great with me.
Yeah. Yeah. Connie, thanks. Comment, Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think once you do it, it's, you know, it's given how powerful it is, it is a lot of patients feel afterwards that it's worth doing. My mom felt the same way. But again, I also encourage you, if you're really worried about it, there is open MRI. And I looked for the term is open MRI. So if you, and Turbo Bay, I think, has that as well. So if she is, has concerns that would stop her from doing a closed MR, I would definitely encourage an open MR. So if the doctor thinks that's okay.
I've had a few of them, mostly on my knees, though, so I didn't have to go the whole way into the tube. I only had to go about halfway. And it is, that certainly made it a little easier for me, for sure. Well, there's a term, compusation, that's often heard in research, in regard to research. What is it and how is it shaping biomedical imaging?
Yeah, the whole idea of computation is really just transform what we do, that, you know, that modern software is used in every part of medical imaging. And when we say computation, it refers to everything from the software that can display the image and the software that can analyze the image. And then more recently, many of you have probably heard the term machine learning or deep learning, where the computer is helping you automatically find features. And so computation is everything. And so it's made a big, big difference. You know, I'm old enough that when I first started off in imaging, we still were using VCRs to collect some of the early images. And now that's all gone. You know, now everything is digital. And it's made a massive difference, because with digital data, you can do things for both research and clinical diagnosis that were not possible otherwise. And so you're seeing this change all across the gamut, from improved speed to improved early detection, to, you know, being able to discover phenomena that you couldn't see with your naked eye. And so I would say that the revolution in imaging is absolutely greatly been buoyed and driven forward by good computing and good algorithms and good machine learning.
MIT recently developed a wearable ultrasound sticker that can continuously image organs for, I think, up to 48 hours. I read the piece on it. I think Jill or sent it along to me, or maybe Clara did. It's a fascinating story. You know, well, you know about this technology, I'm sure. Could you talk about that and what it would mean for patients?
Yeah, so there's been a, when you think about imaging, there is certainly imaging where you go to your doctor's office and you get scanned by an MRI, or, you know, you're pregnant and you have your baby scanned for the ultrasound, the scheduled imaging done in a clinical setting with typically, you know, some large expensive piece of equipment that can get amazing data, but has drawbacks in terms of scheduling it and expensive running it. So one of the dreams is this whole field of wearable electronics, right? Could we have things that your body can wear, right? And you've already seen examples of things like, you know, glasses with built-in computer vision inside them. You know, there's been this, you know, revolution. You know, are there things that you could wear? Probably one of the best examples is diabetic patches, things that could monitor your diabetes as you walk around, and eventually insulin patches that can even deliver insulin. So this has gone to the imaging side as well. Could we develop imaging as a field so low cost and so non-invasive that we could have a steady monitoring of you? So the same way that maybe a Fitbit or some similar device, maybe your Apple Watch, can monitor your vascular health and your blood pressure. Can there be ways that imaging could diagnose or monitor you? So this is a very, very new area. There's a lot of challenges there. But essentially what the MIT folks were proposing is, could they develop ultrasound detection to a point that there could actually be stickers placed at various points in your body that could monitor you with ultrasound and be able to do monitoring and detection outside of the clinic, and also do it in a temporal fashion where you can see it over time. And so this is a very new area, and that's a research paper, but it's exciting, and it just points to how far the technology has come to be miniaturized and to deal with that kind of data in a non-clinical setting. And I think you're going to see more and more monitoring of patients with imaging outside the clinic. That's a future field to be developed.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Bob emailed, wonders how can you observe the human electromagnetic field or aura, or are there other external bodily phenomena?
Yeah, so certainly your body has electrical signals that we can detect, and the ability to try to detect these signals is a big part of what imaging does. And right now where we're really at is kind of going after known signals in the body. And so one of the big interests is trying to see what parts of your body can create electrical signals that we can detect. And the heart is a good example of this, where we can actually detect known frequencies of the heart. There is still a lot of work to be done on kind of what happens with EMF and the body in general. And that's not something that I'm an expert in, but I can definitely tell you that in your body, there are electrical signals that we already are involved as a field in detecting, and the heart is a good example.
Coming up, we'll be talking about aneurysms. this new research, this light research that you're doing, have any impact in that area?
At the moment, the stuff we do doesn't happen at a depth and resolution, particularly depth to see the aneurysms in the intact brain. So for the aneurysm work, that's really going to be a medical imaging, and we'll be able to have the depth to see that. I think what I find fascinating about aneurysms is that, you know, we still are trying to learn, what role imaging could play in early detection. The only thing I've done in that area is that we have done some studies to try to figure out. So imagers often work very closely with biomedical engineers in general. And we have been looking into 3D printing to try to see if we can create better clips for aneurysms that are more, the metal clips right now are very costly and hard to make. And there's a concern about how well they match the geometry of blood vessels. So there's been some interesting papers that we've been involved in how can you create better 3D printed aneurysm clips. But as far as imaging aneurysm clips, this is where medical imaging is really the method that is currently being used for that.
Well, Kevin, you are really doing some cool stuff here, and it's exciting to learn what's going on. And I hope you'll come back and be with us again. I'd love to have you get an update from you on how things are going.
It's my absolute pleasure, and I wish everybody the best for good health and curiosity. And if anybody ever want to ask any questions, the UW is always happy to help, and you can definitely email me. I'm always happy to ask questions or point people in the right direction, and all the best to everybody.
Kevin Ellisieri, professor of medical physics and biomedical engineering at UW-Madison. He's doing some really cool research, and we'll look forward to having him back again and talking with him. I mentioned aneurysms in concluding with Kevin, and certainly there's something that some of us need to be concerned about from time to time. And we're going to be talking about aneurysms with Dr. Luke Bradbury. That next. I'm Larry Mehler for the Ideas Network.